el título de constituyente del pueblo soberano, hoy más que nunca.
La Asamblea Nacional en desacato no solo no asistió a esta sesión del Consejo de Defensa, sino que, según Maduro, el diputado Julio Borges le envió una carta en la que asegura que con la declaración de Trump no habría una intervención, sino una preocupación mundial por la crisis. Para el presidente, esto sería una prueba de qué tan rendida está la oposición a los intereses de Washington. Al comunicado que fue emitido el lunes, se le suma otra información difundida por medios transnacionales. Anuncian supuestas sanciones contra el ministro de la Defensa, general en jefe Vladimir Padrino López, y también con el diputado bolivariano Diosdado Cabello Rondón. Pero ahora no solamente se habla de emprender acciones individuales contra efectivos del gobierno, se está dejando entrever que podría haber incluso una prohibición para la importación de crudo venezolano en los Estados Unidos. Más temprano, el canciller Samuel Moncada aseguró que en cierta forma es importante que este tipo de anuncios hayan ocurrido, porque de esa manera habría quedado al descubierto quién estaría detrás de los actos de desestabilización que han ocurrido en 40 de los 335 municipios que tiene el país y en más de 100 días. Según Trump, la constituyente hará que Venezuela se convierta en una supuesta dictadura. Maduro, en cambio, ha dicho que lo que busca es la paz del país y recuerda que el mecanismo está establecido en la Constitución de la República Bolivariana de Venezuela. Mientras todo esto ocurre, se supo a través de la cuenta Instagram del diario El Tiempo que el grupo de choque opositor conocido como Resistencia quemó vivo y apedreó después a una persona en el estado Anzoátegui. El hecho ocurrió en una zona pudiente conocida como Lecherías y ocurrió casi en simultáneo con otro ataque a una persona, esta vez en Chacao, estado Miranda. Se trató de un trabajador de la transnacional Nestlé que venía con un camión secuestrado por los encapuchados. Parte de la hora cero convocada por la oposición en Venezuela, hay que ver ahora cuáles van a ser las reacciones desde Washington.
México inicia su lucha anticorrupción con un sistema legal pero incompleto. Falta el fiscal que investigue los delitos y los magistrados especializados que sancionen a funcionarios y particulares, lo que evita la aplicación de castigos penales. Emma Torres amplía la información.
Este miércoles 19 de julio ha entrado en vigor el Sistema Nacional Anticorrupción en México, en medio de diversas controversias. Y es que, aunque este sistema había sido creado originalmente para sancionar a los servidores y exservidores públicos vinculados a faltas administrativas graves, y se tenía como objetivo que se coordinaran diferentes actores sociales con las autoridades para poder prevenir, investigar y sancionar a la corrupción que aqueja tanto a México, se ha enfrentado a diferentes dificultades para su ejecución. La primera de ellas es que desde hace 3 años, el Senado no ha podido designar al fiscal anticorrupción que encabece este sistema. Los partidos de izquierda han acusado a otros partidos, como al PRI y al PAN, que no se han puesto de acuerdo porque quieren un fiscal que esté a su modo. Otro de los detalles, de los problemas que ha enfrentado este sistema, es que faltan 18 magistrados del Tribunal Federal de Justicia Administrativa, que fueron propuestos por el presidente y que tendrían que haber sido ratificados, es decir, confirmados por la Cámara Alta. Ellos serían quienes sancionarían a aquellas personas que incurran en actos de corrupción. Para que este sistema nacional se pudiera haber implementado adecuadamente, era necesario implementar sistemas locales de anticorrupción en cada uno de los estados del país y que fueran efectivos desde este pasado 18 de julio. Pero la realidad es que tan solo ha sido implementado adecuadamente en 4 de los 32 estados del país. En 28 estados aún no se designan fiscales y tampoco se cuenta con los tribunales necesarios para su ejecución. Para analizar este tema se encuentra con nosotros Doria Vélez. Ella es directora de investigación del Observatorio Nacional Ciudadano. La primera pregunta: ¿hay quienes piensan que este sistema es una nueva autoridad capaz de acabar con la corrupción? ¿Tú lo consideras así? ¿Es para ti realmente la solución que se necesita en México para acabar con la corrupción?
Desde el Observatorio hemos señalado que uno de los problemas estructurales que afecta a la Procuración y Administración de Justicia y que cruza distintas áreas es el tema de la corrupción. Y esto lamentablemente no es un problema actual, sino que ya estamos hablando de un problema histórico. La conformación del Sistema Nacional Anticorrupción es un primer paso que estamos dando porque no es es el único si realmente lo que queremos hacer es terminar con este fenómeno, pero creo que es un paso muy importante que sobre todo ha sido empujado por organizaciones de la sociedad civil, académicos y empresarios. Entonces, por ese lado, creo que es más que evidente el hecho y la exigencia de la ciudadanía por ya poner fin y tratar de sancionar estos delitos que han dificultado el desarrollo de México en distintas materias y también que se llegue a la procuración y administración de justicia en distintos casos. Es un primer paso, ¿no?
Mientras que decenas de refugiados sirios, entre ellos mujeres y niños, se manifiestan frente a la embajada de Alemania en Atenas por los retrasos del programa de reunificación familiar, en Italia algunos activistas expresan su apoyo a migrantes y refugiados. Rafael Cuesta, del colectivo Más Voces de España, viene con los detalles.
En Roma, la capital de Italia, se ha celebrado una manifestación antirracista en apoyo a migrantes y refugiados. Cómo abordar la inmigración es uno de los ejes del debate político en Italia, y no es para menos. En lo que llevamos de año, más de 100.000 migrantes y refugiados han llegado a la costa mediterránea. El 85% lo hizo a puertos italianos, según la Organización Internacional para las Migraciones. Para Michelangelo Giglio, del sindicato italiano USB, esta crisis hay que analizarla con la perspectiva de años de un neocolonialismo y un capitalismo voraz en los países de origen de los migrantes.
Hay una emergencia de acogida, sí, pero habría que preguntarse si los millones de personas que se mueven desde países pobres no son el resultado de años de colonialismo, imperialismo y la explotación de los recursos.
Pero la crisis migratoria ha agudizado los recelos contra quienes pisan Italia huyendo de la guerra y el hambre, un sentimiento que ha empujado a manifestarse al colectivo antirracista. Muchos colectivos sociales italianos se han visto defraudados por la alcaldesa de Roma, Virginia Raggi, del movimiento 5 Estrellas, que se creía podría ser un partido de izquierdas más social y solidario con las personas que buscan refugio. Sin embargo, la alcaldesa ha pedido limitar la llegada de migrantes a la capital italiana. Así lo expresa un manifestante migrante de origen africano.
Se ha lanzado una campaña contra la diversidad, contra los inmigrantes y los refugiados a través de la alcaldesa de Roma, que pide limitar el flujo migratorio, la llegada de personas a Roma.
No solo la alcaldesa de Roma, Virginia Raggi, del Movimiento 5 Estrellas, se ha pronunciado con un mensaje de rechazo a migrantes. Otros partidos políticos se han unido a alimentar un discurso anti-inmigración en los últimos meses. Matteo Salvini, líder de la ultraderechista Liga Norte, ha afirmado que la inmigración es un intento de limpieza étnica que dificulta a los italianos vivir y trabajar en su país. Incluso Matteo Renzi, secretario del Partido Democrático, escribe en su libro recién publicado que Italia no tiene el deber de acoger a todas las personas que están en peor situación. Ello, cree, sería un desastre ético, político, social y económico. En respuesta a estas posturas xenófobas, los colectivos sociales promigrantes italianos anuncian que continuarán las protestas y señalando a los políticos responsables de crear una sociedad insolidaria con el dolor, la pobreza y las personas que huyen de las guerras. Marcelo Barberini es activista de la asociación Red Decide Roma.
Esto significa que
no pueden gestionar la situación de crisis. El descontento de mucha gente es muy alto y por eso necesitan encontrar un culpable. El culpable no puede ser el modelo productivo o la banca, el culpable debe ser el migrante, el que está peor, aquel que es más fácil de golpear.
Porque es más fácil de golpear.
En la manifestación se hicieron escuchar las voces de migrantes, fundamentalmente africanos.
Nosotros trabajamos aquí, vivimos aquí, pagamos nuestra casa y nuestros impuestos. Gracias a nuestro trabajo también se pueden pagar las pensiones. Pido un poco más de consideración.
El primer ministro italiano, Paolo Gentiloni, ha aprovechado la cumbre de Trieste entre líderes de la Unión Europea y los Balcanes para reclamar solidaridad en la acogida al resto de países europeos y ha pedido no ignorar la realidad de los migrantes económicos sin estatus de refugiado. Ninguna persona es ilegal. Este es el lema empleado por los manifestantes para combatir el racismo y la xenofobia en Italia.
Y así concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de Telesur, Venezolana de Televisión, el diario La Jornada, RT, el colectivo Más Voces y la red Farco de Argentina. A nombre de Toshli y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Hi, R. Duck here, reaching out to you, our friendly listeners of FRSC, the finest radio in Santa Cruz. We ask you, to keep an eye out and let us know for a new studio location. We need something urgently, preferably by September 20th. If you have such a location, let us know. We can give you $500 as a thank you gift. It needs electricity. We can connect up an internet, and a bathroom is also required. Contact FRSC at freakradio.org, and we'll see you on Friday night, 8:30 p.m. until Friday night. At 8:30 p.m., thank you, and thanks for your ongoing help to make such mischief possible.
You get up in the morning, if you like to see the sun come up, if you like to have your coffee in the dark, then Free Radio needs you. We need someone to come in, download some shows, put them on the air. To download the shows in the morning, you need to be here at the studio by about 7 o'clock. Send us an email to FRSC at freakradio.org and put morning person in the subject line. That way, Democracy Now! Can go on the air at 8 o'clock. Get in touch with us as soon as you can. Let us know what day or days you can be a Free Radio morning person. And once again, that email address, FRSC at freakradio.org.
Working together, the Thursday morning shindig in front of the library on the corner across from the now banned zone at City Hall. And I see people are going into City Hall, or at least they're reading the posts in front of City Hall. The City Hall offices where the mayor and city council hang out. And it looks like an equal mixture of folks outside and service providers. So the evil viper has finally been eliminated from the scene. You're just finishing bandaging up your left leg. What happened to your leg?
It's just old injuries.
Yeah, bummer. So when did you get the two-year heave-ho?
On my last court date. It was the 11th or the 12th. And they gave me a choice of 2 years jail time or 2 years probation.
And your crime was this thing over at the... what was the crime?
It was...
If you wish to say.
Cases has been reopened and they were closed for over 5 years.
Well, they have special interest in you, Viper.
They want me out of this town, or dead.
What was the case?
One of them was possession, and the other one was theft for something under $5 at CVS.
These are pretty serious crimes, Viper.
Oh, fight me. The last person who got and told me these were the worst crime. The worst crime is shooting someone or stabbing a cop. I haven't done any of those.
Or perhaps taking away people's liberties who are poor.
They kicked me off of City Hall property, and none of my tickets were on City Hall property.
So as a condition of probation for this, you were told you had to be away from where for 2 years?
Off of City Hall property for 2 years.
So you could be at the library if you want?
Yes.
Which is where we are now. Have you heard anything about what happened the night before last? Was there a Freedom Sleep Out 105?
Yes, we had like maybe five, maybe six people out here. I slept on this side of the street by the library, but they had like cops driving by very slowly and being idiots, of course.
Not offering coffee, of course.
No. They just wanted us out of their little front of their community.
Did people stay?
We all stayed. We didn't run from no cop.
Did Food Now Bombs provide or any other groups provide any food or support?
We had some people who came and dropped off some peanut butter and jelly, but no good food.
Joe Schultz didn't show up with coffee?
No one.
Do you think it's going to happen again next week?
Yeah.
Nothing can get you down in your criminal career, eh?
Hell no. I just met some newer community family members for downtown.
What's your sense about the rest of the week? Does anybody show up here at all?
No one. No one shows up and hangs out in the front of City Hall ever again.
And what about the library?
Library, they hang out here or at the park, but not anywhere near the front of City Hall.
How about the post office?
I can say something, it could be off the record, but I...
And next up on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.3 FM, also at freakradio.org, the stream of Free Radio, is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the Thursday, July 20th, 2017 show. Today's show, as has been the case recently, is another flashback. We're going to jump back to December 15th, 2005, and that's going to be most of this two-hour show, with a couple of updates before that happens, as well as a couple of interviews from today on the Santa Cruz Library across from the now essentially forbidden zone that is Santa Cruz City Hall. That is going to be something that will be covered briefly. And I hope all you folks out there are covering it with your eyes on the prize in more detail day to day and night to night. I'm going to go through a couple of really quick news briefs or
Freak Radio Santa Cruz 101 FM.
Target locked on.
Pirate radio at its finest.
There's an unlicensed broadcast station here, and we want to make sure that you stop operating.
There is.
Nothing you have heard before will prepare you for this. The sound of radio is being revolutionized by the masters.
Go! Is anybody listening out there?
FCC, you know what that means?
Yeah, it means Federal Communications Commission. They can drive around and triangulate wherever the hell a radio signal is coming from.
Yeah, so fuck it, right? Good idea!
Freak Radio Santa Cruz.
And next up on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.3 FM, also at freakradio.org, the stream of Free Radio, is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the Thursday, July 20th, 2017 show. Today's show, as has been the case recently, is another flashback. We're going to jump back to December 15th, 2005, and that's going to be most of this two-hour show, with a couple of updates before that happens, as well as a couple of interviews from today on the Santa Cruz Library across from the now essentially forbidden zone that is Santa Cruz City Hall. That is going to be something that will be covered briefly. And I hope all you folks out there are covering it with your eyes on the prize in more detail day to day and night to night. I'm going to go through a couple of really quick news briefs or stuff in the newspapers that interested me. I'd spend more time on these stories if I could, but I haven't got much time here because I'm mainly doing this flashback. The Sentinel and I think yesterday's, I think it's the Mercury News, had a lengthy AP story about the U.S. restoring asset seizures. That's forfeiture seizures. That's when they can take your property without any criminal convictions or in some cases even indictments. And this guy was rolled out yesterday, called adoptive forfeiture. which lets local authorities circumvent more restrictive state laws to seize property under federal law and then share the booty with the feds. So it gives an incentive to the cops and the feds to seize your stuff. And again, this really concerns people who have property, who have cars and boats and cash and houses and, you know, any kind of and money. It doesn't really impact the people that I'm often talking about, which is poor people outside. Significant expansion of police power and is likely to puff up our pals in the police departments of the area, whether the deputies or the SCPD or other departments. Provides a funding source similar to the funding sources that were created, I think, really inappropriately by voters in establishing funding for cops to enforce, pot cultivation restrictions in the county and also in different states. This is being done at a statewide level, essentially provides more drug war money. You would have thought the drug war was over. It ain't. And one of these years, it would be nice if someone actually did a careful study and monitoring of what's actually happening in Santa Cruz around the drug war. I mean, you hear it said, oh, Santa Cruz, liberal area, not much happening here. Everything is mellow. But in fact, talk to the people in the jail and see how mellow it really is. Again, about the forfeitures, according to the Sessions, the fascistic attorney general appointed by Trump, this new forfeiture law is going to be better than the old one, which was essentially put on low key, if not retired, by Obama and his attorney general, because it will require more detail from police agencies about so-called probable cause justifying a seizure before federal authorities get involved, and also will, quote, let property owners know their rights and the status of their belongings within 45 days of the seizures. That's a month and a half, which is apparently faster than the federal law requires at the moment. Another key change will make it harder for police to seize less than $10,000 unless they have a state warrant, have made an arrest related to the seizure, have taken other contraband, such as drugs, along with the money, or the owner has confessed to a crime. Notice there's a variety of ways they can take your stuff, even if you're not even indicted for a crime or convicted of a crime. Old rules set the threshold at $5,000. So now, if they're going to do something under $10,000, they have to whip out one of these exceptions. Anyway, it's a longer story. You might want to check it out in yesterday's Sentinel. Stuff that's more relevant, perhaps, to topics I cover. The San Francisco Chronicle has been covering a lot of stuff around San Francisco's homeless count. Indeed, Santa Cruz had a homeless count recently. And there's a lot of talk about success and failure and rising numbers and falling numbers and how accurate it is or it isn't. And the big thing in San Francisco that is getting the publicity in the papers, and I think they have a whole long series called Beyond Homelessness, is the so-called, what are they called, direction centers, resource centers, navigation centers. And these are large sort of temporary living areas for, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, where not only, and it's not like the wretched shelters that currently exist in San Francisco, or at least not exactly like them, because it allows you to bring in your pets, sleep with your partner, come and go during the day, come back, store your property there. In other words, it has some of the markings of a campground, and perhaps more safety, although I'm not quite sure how safe you are from authorities, or it's not clear to me that there's been an independent study done of that. And there's a story in, I think it's today's Chronicle about state to fund a new navigation center with additional money, and this is supposed to be whoop-de-boo, whoop-de-hal-ya-la-la. You know, it's a big to-do. But the real issue is this will only last for a couple of months, and this is supposed to be a way of navigating you into housing, because this is the big mythology that homeless corralling agencies, including in Santa Cruz, are using. They are claiming that if they just get you together, stamp the proper numbers on your forehead, put you in the proper checklists and computer lists, they're going to find you the services you need. And that's why they get to move you out of the encampment you're in and drive you away from where you are, let's say, wretchedly huddling outside City Hall, because they have a better alternative for you that they can force you into if you don't agree to go there. But, of course, in Santa Cruz, there are no alternatives. And in San Francisco, for most homeless people, there are no alternatives either. And even these navigation centers, as they're called, they rarely mention real housing that comes out of going into these centers. I mean, it is true that they claim that for 2 months afterward, they found housing for a percentage of the people that went into the navigation centers. And that's fine. That's good for them. People are looking for housing. But in terms of anything permanent or real or dealing with a majority of people or dealing with even a minority of people over a longer period of time, there's no evidence that that's actually happening. And so it's largely a PR ploy designed to appeal to the constituencies of these liberal communities so that they can feel good about what they're doing without really doing anything other than continuing to build the same high-rise, high-cost, luxury shit that they've been doing for the last 50, 60, 100, who knows how many years. And on the local scene, some of you may have noticed in yesterday's Sent Anal, or Sentinel, as they call it, there was a long story about MH Can getting screwed. That's the Mental Health Clients Action Network. I talked about that at length by describing a Facebook exchange on Sarah Leonard's Facebook page and denouncing the higher-ups in the MH Can, Steve Plage, Sylvia Karras, I don't know about Sarah, maybe Sarah Leonard, because of taking the wrong strategy. Instead of coming out and directly appealing to the community, denouncing police attempts to criminalize them and perhaps collude, although Plage denied this to me today, with a developer, let's say John Livingston, who has the property nearby and wants to develop on it, wants to get MH Can out of there, and little right-wing operatives like Susie O'Hara, staff member for so-called principal management analyst for the city, who I've talked about before. She's a nice person, but, you know, she is acting on behalf of interest groups that seem to want to destroy MH Can by, of course, subjecting it, first giving it a little money as a carrot, taking away money from other homeless services and other social services, with a diminished pie that they can all fight over, and instead of getting together and demanding that the police department and the Parks and Rec, which devours most of the budget, unloose some of that money. Instead, they get to fight over a very small segment of the pie. And MH Can is supposed to feel real great that they got all this money or more money. And, of course, now they're finding that they can't use it without so severely they're restricting their services that they can't, it'll be alter in kind what they do. And I've talked about that before. I went into the details of it last time, and it has to do with limiting their hours, limiting groups that they're allowed to meet there, like Alcoholics Anonymous, limiting their right to have spontaneous meetings, severe restrictions on how people can gather in the area, a whole series of restrictions which would be bad for any organization trying to help people who are in need, but particularly bad for people who are psychologically sensitive, which is what Mental Health Clients Action Network tries to do. And it kind of all goes, it all kind of returns this to the lesson, do it yourself, don't go to the government for funding. But it isn't even true necessarily that MHCAN spent a lot of time going to the government. They did some, but the government spent time going to them. The planning department has been cracking down on them. But the real, the second lesson is you fight back the way groups like Food Not Bombs has fought back. At least that's the lesson that I gain from this. The other thing I noticed in the papers is also today's front page story, puffing up the Downtown Streets team, which supposedly offers vouchers and job training skills, and has a picture of our sellout artist, Chip, who's... I'd love to give his full name, because he always likes to be so cool and have his one name as though he's some sort of... I don't know, maybe I just have this irrational distaste for Chip. He apparently was an artist some years ago, maybe he still is, and he then joined the Downtown Association as their public relations man, and also, I guess, his official position is... Well, it says he's from the Downtown Association. This program provides, you know, it's one of these sort of like the hosts. You may remember the hosts who were eventually sort of left town and were replaced by the Parks and Rec Rangers and sort of direct thugs from First Alarm Security, marching up and down Pacific Avenue, telling people where to sit, how long they could sit, what little places they could perform in, where they couldn't, and so forth and so on. This is a group that supposedly is, quote, restoring dignity, inspiring hope, the usual horseshit that the Sentinel obediently broadcasts. In fact, however, what they're doing is they're a apparently 12-year-old organization. Teams established in Palo Alto, San Jose, Sunnyvale, San Rafael, San Francisco, Hayward, Nevada. And they graduate people who move on to jobs and remain employed for 90 days afterward. And it's nice to be able to be offered jobs. But the notion is they somehow need retraining. You see, these homeless people are just, you know, they are profound... They're disabled in some way that they don't know how to write checks. They don't know how to rent an apartment. They don't know how to get to a job. This has never been shown to me to be the case for the homeless community in Santa Cruz. I mean, certainly it is true that a large number of people have all kinds of disabilities that they have to work with and that are ignored and abusively treated by police agencies and other agencies, including the library here in Santa Cruz, and the city hall, city staff, downtown businesses, and so forth. But, I mean, I notice in this article, if you read deeper, the people for this program, the DST, the Downtown Street Team, they don't get paid for what they do. Instead, they get weekly stipends, which are gift cards or vouchers for needed services and products, such as clothing, shelter, food, and transportation passes. Which you might say, oh, well, that way they won't spend it on drugs and alcohol, right? Wrong. This is like a company town where in the 1800s, people who worked in the company town had to get script instead of money for what they did. And they had to spend it in the company stores. This seems to me to be identical. And so this is... And they have mandatory weekly team member meetings. Every week at the 418 Center, and they work out of the Bob Lee Community Partnership. It's interesting that that's what it's called. Bob Lee is the famous prosecutor who went after me and 10 other activists at Santa Cruz 11 for essentially being high-profile Occupy activists, making demands for fundamental change in Santa Cruz as other Occupy activists were doing across the country, and specifically being in a vacant bank building, still vacant many, many years later, but it's private property, and it's better that it remain vacant, that people have a place to sleep at night against the wind and the cold, or a community center to gather in. So that's the story in today's Sent Anal. Again, it's called Giving Jobs to the Homeless. There's no indication of what jobs they've gotten, but there's this claims... I suppose, I suspect the people in these programs like them, but it's to me, it's a form like of peonage. It's a form, it's people as less than they are. I've also noted a lot of articles on police abuse. Not a lot locally on police abuse, although, as has been mentioned on the Food Not Bombs website and posted, our new police chief, Greg Sparks, has devoted a considerable punch against homeless people, removing them from his previous place of employment, where he was also a police chief up in Eureka, California, and concerned about such crimes as, well, loitering, camping, clean streets, blight, loitering. And there's not much in his letter to the city manager up north that suggests housing for homeless people or real services. I'm looking, maybe I'm jumping at the gun here. His solutions are paint curbs that you can't loiter, remove the overhanging loading dock so people can't camp there and out of the rain, demolish a railroad building so people can't camp, post no loitering signs so people can't loiter, although loitering is a legal activity according to the U.S. Supreme Court, remove shopping carts so people can't camp more comfortably, establish daytime use areas so that people can't loiter. That's being done around City Hall here in Santa Cruz, even before the good Greg's arrival, thanks to the real powerhouse in the city, Martin Bernal, who hired Greg. Martin is the city manager. Loitering, move the mobile services away so they don't loiter there. Loitering, disperse after lunch. Require people to disperse from a lunch area. Adjust the times of meal services so people don't have a chance to get together and loiter. A go-home campaign, as if people had homes to go to. I mean, it is really oblivious, nasty stuff. And this is the guy hired as police chief. Now, I got to admit, I haven't talked to the guy, and he supposedly comes on real sweet and smarmy, or sweet and, I don't know, reasonable. More on him when I get better information. But police are big in the papers. Trial in the Steinle case can start next month. That's the case of Kate Steinle, who really became a real object of right-wing hysteria in the papers a couple years ago when she was shot by a gun that fell from the hands of a illegal immigrant, Francisco Sanchez, and he was then called a murderer. But it was a ricochet that happened when this gun fell down on the sidewalk. It was improbable that it would even hit her, but it did. There was no indication he intended to hit her. It was taken from the car of some off-duty ranger, cop, service officer of some kind, and then became the basis for a law that, and a big push against immigrants. Then, of course, we have the case of, finally it's going to trial, and the defense is saying, what a bunch of horseshit, as they should have, and as they should, and as we should have years ago when this case first came up. There's a Minneapolis police officer, you may have read recently or heard about it, who shot and killed an Australian woman after she called 911 twice to report a possible crime. She was a Somali American. Sounds like she might have been darker of skin. And her name is Mohamed Noor. I'm sorry. She's not the Somali American. I beg your pardon. And so I may be the other way around. She may be the white person, and the cop may be the black person or the darker person. His name is Mohamed Noor. He apparently was hired to diversify in Minnesota, and no weapon was found. There was not clear why he shot the woman who was killed, whose name is Justin Damon, a meditation teacher and bride-to-be. She called because she believed there was an active sexual assault happening, and this was another one of those shootings. She came out in her pajamas, and the cop shot her dead. The real issue, of course, is, you know, such things can happen, although why they would happen, why there would be a shoot to kill, when I'm now beginning to hear Carol Denny's comments notwithstanding. She's an activist in Berkeley who believes that shooting to kill is the smartest policy for the police, although it has to be said she is no fan of police treatment of the homeless. In Europe, they don't do that. I have not researched that thoroughly, but that is what I'm beginning to hear, and I want to research that further. The Minneapolis police officer that we're talking about, Mohammed Noor, is refusing to give an account to the police department, which you're normally supposed to do, and you're required to do as a police officer, claiming the Fifth Amendment protections, which I can understand. But the real issue is the police department's arresting the person who clearly killed, or the district attorney arresting the person who killed this woman. And the fact that he's got a badge and a gun seems to have prevented that from happening. There is a sort of a positive story about the Santa Clara County DA going after excessive force cases by deputies and guards in the jail after there was finally a conviction of three guards who beat to death Michael Tyree in August of 2015. Now there are two more cases there where, of course, the deputies are claiming that the jails are unsafe because these wild and crazy judges and the, I guess, the sheriff in response is insisting on more protections for inmates and also harsher punishment or clearer monitoring of spitting has gone up against guards. There's an editorial by John Raffling in the Chronicle that suggests that Congress should reject a bill called Back the Blue, which ups penalties for violence against the police nationally and also essentially hamstrings people trying to engage in civil lawsuits to get some kind of justice when police violate constitutional rights and cause injury. That's very serious. That's one of the few protections we have if we ever get attorneys to do anything, is to have police held accountable. That's really all I've got time for. I'm running through some of the papers that I put aside. I want to remind you that the flashbacks you're going to hear, or the flashback show you're going to hear, from December 15th, 2005, will have various phone numbers that don't currently operate anymore. One of them does. That's my Huffline, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 831-423-HUFF, Huff. So you can definitely check out that line. Just remember that announcements about stuff that's made are, 12 years old, so don't jump up and rush on out. There have been a lot of interesting things happening. Hopefully I'll be able to talk about it on Sunday. And you will get, right now, we're going to go directly into the intro, which has interviews by several homeless folks who were either at the ACLU forum that happened day before yesterday, Houseless Rights, or the thing that happened later that night, the Freedom Sleep Out number 105. And we'll get into that right now.
Welcome to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides on Free Radio. As mentioned before, I'm Robert Norris, and this is, it's also Micro Power Radio you're listening to. We're freakradio.org on the internet if you want to catch us at www.freakradio.org. If you want to support Free Radio, mail your bills to P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061, 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. If I'm talking too fast or you don't have a pencil handy, try to remember the words Freak Radio, all one word, all small letters, Freak, F-R-E-A-K, radio.org. Just go online, and you can use PayPal or get more information about us there. You can apply for a show if you'd like. You can register your concerns, criticisms, commendations, whatever seems to be appropriate. Input is appreciated because we don't have any rating system. We don't know how many people are listening to us, if anybody is. So if you hate this show, please call in and say so. You can do on the air by calling me at 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, of course. Or you can do it off air by calling my voicemail, which is also a voicemail for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is, of course, for those who've heard this before, 423-HUF, 423-HUFF. 423-4833. Again, the on-air number, if you want to be a part of the ongoing discussion, is 427-3772, and the off-air number is 423-4833. There's also a chat room that I'm right now actually poking out, or pecking out, if you will. And that's at pagesincolor.com, and that's a chat room that human rights organization activist John Teelking provides for the show. Much thanks, John, for doing that. And you can listen to him and the, well, you can actually read the discussion, unless you have a very fancy machine. You probably won't be able to hear anything because there's no voice there. But you can certainly express your concerns and your messages, particularly if you have trouble getting through on the phone, or you prefer not to do that. That's pagesincolor.com for the chat room. Call in line, 427-3772. And you can also catch the show later in case you missed it and you want to hear parts you missed, or perhaps you want to hear the whole thing because it's so exciting and wonderful and riveting. You can go to huffsantacruz.org, which is the website for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and also a place where you catch the back editions of this show. So check it out if you'd like. I'm going to begin with a street interview, and then we'll probably proceed to some bits and blips from the Santa Cruz City Council meeting, last of the year, last of the month, the first December meeting of Mayor Cynthia Matthews. God help us all. And you'll be able to hear the kind of, you'll be able to hear some of the things I talked about, and I will be discussing directly with you what happened at the council meeting from my perspective, as well as you'll be able to hear the actual text of some of it, the actual tape-recorded soundtrack.
It's about 11 o'clock on December 13, 2005. That's Tuesday morning. Kind of frosty here at, what is it, Fuck the Police Corner, chalked in on the sidewalk. What are you calling it?
Punk Rock Corner.
Punk Corner?
Punk Rock Corner.
Punk Rock Corner. I see punks, but I don't see any rocks. So I guess there are a few rocks around here. And we're talking with?
Ocean Thompson.
And Ocean, you had an experience on Halloween that sort of disinclined you to invite the police over for dinner?
And in fact, this, of course, is the corner right across from the Metro where the parking lot for Union Grove Music is situated.
This is true. I stopped a gentleman from beating his girlfriend, and Mr. Robocop, Dave Perry, tackles me. They take me to jail. They can't get into my records because I'm a 14-year naval combat vet. So they release me after 22 minutes of being in jail and tell me that I owe $360 in booking charges.
What are they charging you with?
Disturbing the peace.
So I guess they're not claiming you were intoxicated.
No, I hadn't been intoxicated. I don't drink during the night anyway. So if I'm going to do something, I'll drink.
Where did this happen?
This happened just up the street, right where the fencing started in the middle of the street.
And what was the circumstance? Were there a lot of witnesses?
There was a hell of a lot of witnesses. All my friends were there. We had people playing music in front of us. And the cops just tackled me. And they didn't even take the man who beat his girlfriend, and she took off. She had a black eye. They didn't even question him. Mr. Perry told me that I could either go to jail for battery or disturbing the peace. It was my choice.
What did you say?
Well, of course I said disturbing the peace. I don't have any violence on my record. You know?
Now,
I have no record at all.
How many police officers were involved in this?
Four on their gang squad.
At what time of the evening did it happen?
It happened approximately 9:44. I was back on the street at the same corner by 10:20.
And did you see Officer Perry again that night?
No, I didn't.
And how many, again, you said how many police were involved?
There was four. They had a goon squad of four, and he had his poker face on, and everybody kind of knows RoboCop. You know, he wasn't pleasant. He had nothing nice to say to anybody. As a matter of fact, I encountered them earlier in the evening, and I told them Happy Halloween, and they won't even look at me.
So, did you see anything else that night regarding the police that struck you, in one sense or another?
Yeah, the police presence and the way they were handling it. I mean, if they're here to serve and protect, why are they so unprofessional in their relationships with the public? I don't understand
that. What did you see that was unprofessional?
People wishing them a happy Halloween and how are you doing? And they would walk by and not say anything and just keep going. And, you know, and they didn't perpetrate any violence on anybody else but the people that are actually out here on the street all the time. And you know what? That's just not right.
Did you see any other violence or any other actions you consider to be inappropriate on that Halloween evening?
I really didn't. As a matter of fact, I was having a really joyous time. I had friends who were giving a great concert. It was really a beautiful thing.
What do you think about the claim that that first night is going to experience problems given the seven stabbings that occurred on Halloween?
Well, the seven stabbings that occurred were because of the gang members within the 10 years in the Serenias. And what they did is they invited them in 4 years ago, and they've been a presence here ever since.
Who invited them in?
When the city invited them in, they said, hey, you guys are allowed here. You know, they carry around weapons, and all they're into is stabbing each other. You know, that's all they did. Every single one of them, we had seven men flown out of here with stab wounds. That's how serious the stabbings were.
They were all Serenio on Serenio?
Serenios and Norteños.
Now, what about...
No, there was no other ethnic organization involved. It was a gang thing.
But there was other violence, because you mentioned there was a guy hit. The men, you intervened to stop.
I intervened because they had both been drinking, and I stopped them from hitting each other.
Now, what about you? What did you think about the, some called them the cages, others called them the wire partitions in the middle of the street, up and down Pacific that the police set up? Any feeling about that?
Yeah, I thought they were, I'm trying to search for the right word. I felt they put the public in danger. Because, you know, you can't roll a fire truck down the street with a bunch of cages in the middle, right? If you had an ambulance and needed to get through, what would have happened?
You know, what were they used for? Did you see anybody held by the police in there?
I see nobody in there. All I see is they had a chance to misdirect their anger and use it against the people out here on the street. You know, I pay taxes. I work. You know, I'm not working on any welfare. I'm a carpenter. You know, I don't do any welfare. You know, I can't work at the moment because I have cancer, but I'm working on it. You know, every little chance I get, if I can do labor ready 4 days a week, I'm good.
Use medical marijuana?
Yes, sir, I do. And I do have a card in both Washington, Oregon, and California.
How did they treat you on Halloween with that card? Did you have marijuana on you?
I must tell you, I was very surprised. Yes, I did. I had a big fat joint, and I had a nice pipe, and the pipe and the joint came back in my personal property. You know, I was impressed with that, and so did my medical marijuana card was right next to him. But they did return it.
Good for them.
I was pleasantly surprised at that. And I'll tell you, aside from the goon squad that brought me down, the officers in the jail treated me with nothing but respect. You know, I got to say the truth there. And the gentlemen that were running the bringing everybody back in out of the vans, and they were bringing them in, were very respectful.
Were there a lot of arrests that evening you saw?
There were a lot of arrests. Man.
Justified or not?
Full. The jail was full.
Justified or not, in your view?
I don't know everybody's personal circumstance, but I imagine that the younger guys that were drunk were getting into it, and they kind of deserved what they got. But you know, they brought in a bunch of people that I do know that are older, that are walking with canes and stuff for stupid stuff, like this gentleman here.
You're pointing to a man who's crossing the street with a walker.
And with a walker and wheelchairs. And when they figured out they couldn't handle the handicapped in there, they cut them loose. And when you take me to jail for 32 minutes, it charged me $360 for a booking charge. It was all about money. It was arrest as many as you can so you can get as many of them in there because they're afraid they're not going to show up. One FDA turns into another ticket. Another ticket turns into another warrant. That warrant turns into a felony warrant because after that it's over $15,000. It's not good. You know, it's not right. What they did is it's a systematic elimination of people that are just trying to survive out here. You know, we don't get enough from our government as it is. You know, trying to survive out here isn't easy. You know, I'm not out here robbing stores. I don't panhandle. You know, and I'm not saying anything against that. I don't judge anybody either. But, you know, I'm out there. I'm trying to just make a living and get going, you know. I'm waiting on a Navy settlement, and this is the best I can do right now. I don't walk around unshaved or unclean. My clothes are clean. My shoes are in good repair. I'm not out here abusing anybody. And still, I constantly draw police attention. And I am a 14-year naval combat red with no record at all. And every time they run me, they can't get in my record because it's all sealed by September 11th. I have 6 Purple Hearts and a Silver Star. I gave my all for this country, and I do it again. I love my country. I just don't trust my government anymore.
We've been talking with
Ocean Thompson.
Thanks, Ocean.
Santa Cruz City Council, December 13th.
You all can speak in a normal tone of voice because it's actually December 15th, and that was 2 days ago. I'm going to pause briefly before I oppress you with the latest city council activities or inactivity on key areas, because I did get a call while the last segment was on, and I believe the caller may want to call back and express some concerns, make some comments, so I'm going to give her a chance to do so. And that could be her right now. We'll just see about that. Hi, are you the caller who called before?
I am.
Well, welcome to Free Radio.
Thank you. I have my show there, too, you know. But
yes, you do.
I actually listen really a lot still, even though sometimes lately it's been kind of painful at times and upsetting. I don't turn my radio off very often, and I have never in the last 6 years tuned my station to any other station but Free Radio. But I did want to say that I heard in the mainstream news a little bit ago, because I did start to watch a little mainstream news, local news, that the FBI was investigating the anti-military protest that happened up at UCSC, and somehow people obtained some documents that prove that the FBI was watching the people protesting and taking notes, and there were things about how, like, much of a threat they might be and stuff. And I mean, it was like a big thing that the FBI was up there doing up there. And Sandino, another programmer there at Free Radio, or here at Free Radio, or at Free Radio, was on mainstream news saying, you know, that he's really just disgusted by America. And I think he's right on, and I just wanted to let you know and let other people know that in mainstream news, which is usually, in my opinion, somehow censored to not be truthful, they are showing that, indeed, the FBI has documents about the people they were, you know, observing at the protest that was anti-military at UCSC.
Yeah, if you go to SantaCruzIndyMedia.org, the top story is students denounce Pentagon surveillance of counter-recruitment activities.
There we go. Thank you. Go for some non-corporate media coverage, and it will be even better.
And they actually have the original MSNBC story here linked, so you can actually see or hear that story. And then there's the Department of Defense database of domestic threats, and information about the COP, Pittsburgh organizing group returns to Oakland recruiting station. I guess there's also concerns about maybe about the Capitola Mall too. UCSC students kick military recruiters off campus, of course, is an older story. There's some older stories that are also linked here and some comments. I can read a little bit about that if you'd like.
That would be great. And if other people want to call in and comment about how they feel about that, that would be cool too, because, you know, I personally am just, like, kind of shocked that the FBI was so sloppy with the documents.
Right. I wouldn't be shocked if I were you.
Okay. Thank you.
All righty.
Bye.
Yeah, this is, I hate to preach to the choir. I know most people listening to this show are going to, of course, I always do preach to the choir, so it seems kind of strange. Maybe I like to give my own particular topics. I guess that's my thrill. However, the story, because the listener asked, and for those of you who want, you can go directly to IndyMedia, SantaCruz.IndyMedia.org. According to a document obtained by NBC News, the Pentagon has been spying on 1,500, quote, suspicious incidents, including anti-war and counter-recruitment meetings and actions throughout the nation over the past 10-month period. Among the first pages of more than 400 released, 10 college anti-war protests were listed, including UC Santa Cruz Students Against the War's counter-recruitment protest of April 5, 2005, which was the only one to be labeled both credible and a, quote, threat. Despite having dealt with both undercover police and university agents involved in the acts of surveillance and repression, the news came as a little shock to many SAW members, reaffirming long-held beliefs about the nature of the U.S. military. Third-year student Jen Lowe noted the hypocrisy of the government's messaging, reminding us that the notion of the Pentagon spying on peaceful protesters is a major threat to the freedoms that they claim to protect. While the Department of Defense has not commented on the allegations, student activists assert that the rising unpopularity of the Iraq War and the inability of military recruiters to meet their quotas make the counter-recruitment movement a strong candidate for repression by a homeland security apparatus run amok. And I'm checking a few of the other links. Again, this is a story on Indy Media. this is an earlier story, so I'm going to try and stick with the current stories, but there's a lot of links on this front page, center and top of the Indy Media News Wire. Some of the comments, I'm looking at them now, and you can too. There's a picture of an agent caught spying on nonviolent counter-recruitment protesters in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I guess they may be trying to identify him. Then there's surveillance. Another surveillance guy is taking photos. I think I saw this guy, actually, on April 20th, 2005. Maybe I'm imagining I did. Maybe I'm thinking of the... No, I think I did, actually. That was the... either that day and the day after, it was the day of the... Either the day or the day after the police violence against the Tent University, the Santa Cruz Tent University that happened up there, Tusk, Tent University of Santa Cruz. And let's see, on April 20th, 2005, some months ago, the Action in Defense of Education Network, AID, held its first statewide action against budget cuts to education, representing the Santa Cruz chapter of the network. Roughly 150 students and union members from UCSC took over the streets in a march to the county building in downtown Santa Cruz. There they met and rallied with elementary school and high school teachers, as well as Santa Cruz and Pajaro school district teachers and parents. C.C. Pinero, vice president of the Santa Cruz County School Board, came to show support. And so there's more commentary on the Indy Media website. No place to hide. Activists under surveillance by Pentagon include UCSC students. And for all you with computers, go check it out. There's not a lot I can read that I think would give anyone more information about that. But all you renegade and rogue FBI agents, please call in and give us the skivvy. And, of course, I'm joking, but I'm not really joking. Daniel Ellsberg gave a moving appeal about 3 or 4 weeks ago in a speech he made on, the show which carried it. I'm sure it was from some other place, but it was Unwelcome Guests, which Free Radio broadcasts. I think it's on Thursdays. I'm not sure. A really moving appeal that he, Daniel Ellsberg, blew the whistle too late to stop the millions of Vietnamese casualties, the several million Vietnamese casualties that happened, not to mention the, 50 or 60,000 U.S. deaths and the hundreds of thousands of wounded. But he urged whistleblowers not to make the mistake he made, which is to keep quiet, hoping you can persuade the powers that be to change, hoping that torture is going to be stopped because Condoleezza Rice says it is, or because Senator McCain says that, you know, it's all going to be okay with his new resolution in the Senate. I really find myself shaking my head as I read the paper this morning. Of course, all the focus on this essentially irrelevant debate about, you know, whether you include this resolution in the McCain resolution about the U.S. not torturing folks and sticking to the military handbook. All they got to do, of course, is change the military handbook. But the real question is, if they've been torturing people, who's been torturing people, how do we hold them accountable, and what's been going on? Not, are we going to make pious protestations about this not happening? Because I'm sure that, you know, those are the kind of protestations we've heard all along. And, you know, there are no CIA camps in Eastern Europe and other European countries. That's what the EU is now saying, in spite of the reports by human rights groups. They're saying that, well, we have no real evidence. And some of this has to do with the fact, well, the allegation, and I was reading this with a downcast heart, that in fact the EU, in spite of the European Union, the countries who are, you know, form a group in Europe, have colluded with this U.S. operation. German governments and other governments, too, that now claim to be so shocked are not that shocked. They agreed to it, and they just want to cover their own butts. So there's not, well, the political will come from something like, well, the proposal that Keith McHenry made on last Sunday's show. You may, those of you who heard that really interesting discussion with Keith McHenry, who's the co-founder of Food Not Bombs, calling in from Tucson, Arizona, that we need a week of national stoppages that will stop things from happening. Tent cities outside federal buildings, tent cities outside draft centers, tent cities outside military plants. We need huge amount of protest that stops things. And if this be treason, make the most of it. It's not, of course. It's fidelity to the U.S. Constitution and fidelity to basic decency as well. Yeah, bad times, in spite of all the rosy election news over in Iraq, where, you know, it's more of the a spin and window dressing stuff that's been going on regularly, whether it's the capture of Saddam or the mission accomplished or the supposed turning over of Bremer's puppets to Alawi and his puppets, you know, or whether it's the election of January, which excluded the Sunnis, or whether it's the current the Constitution, and they got one thing after another to divert the attention of the world community and the American people, particularly the American people, to persuade folks that, well, this is a great steps are being taken. It's a hard road we're hoeing, blah, blah, blah. It's interesting. I listened to Bill O'Reilly today. I don't usually do that on KSCO. And O'Reilly was admitting and acknowledging that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and that they had faulty intelligence. And what the hell are we doing in Iraq? He was asking that question. Of course, he had on a bunch of right-wingers who were using the neocon arguments that Iraq is a strategic point and it's a great beacon for the Middle East to have the democracy being instituted in Iraq under force of arms. And the whole neocon argument, which essentially is invade a country, get rid of the dictator, and you sort of press forward. Of course, it's really a self-interested argument that has to do with the maintenance of American power and doesn't have much to do with real democracy. That's been my, even if I think it's unrealistic what they propose to do and how they propose to do it, because they're talking about foreign impositions as a form of imperialism. It's kind of similar to what Athens did in the ancient world, where it overthrew oligarchies in favor of democracies, but then just simply took over the countries. I try to also be fair in my analysis. I was reading also that Uzbekistan, which is one of the stands that kind of surrounds Iraq, Iran, it's in that line in the Middle East between Russia, Turkey, and Iran, has kicked the U.S. bases out, or has told the U.S. to leave, according to the papers, because the U.S. challenged Uzbekistan's brutal suppression of a dissident movement, I think in March or April of this year. And I thought, well, is the U.S. actually going to leave a country because the tin pot dictator there says so? And I guess Uzbekistan is now going further and saying you can't fly over the country. So I don't know. I haven't investigated this, and I like to present contradictory information because one must always consider the possibility that one's wrong in one's estimation of what's cooking. This is 101.1 FM for those of you who just tuned in. Also, freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and this is Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. I mostly try to focus on civil rights issues locally concerning homeless folks and poor folks and political activity, particularly radical political activity locally. I think it's not covered as much as it should be, particularly around folks who live outside. I don't think there's a lot that goes on in either this station or other stations. There's some, but not much. And I wish I were doing some more systematically. And I would encourage you to call in with your reports if you've seen instances of police misconduct, if you hear services falling down, if you got praise for particular police officers or particular things that are happening in the county that relate to poor folks. Let's hear about it. It's Christmas coming up. Ha ha. It's cold out there. City Council has gone on recess for 6 weeks. You know, I can sit back on its laurels. Well, tonight, less than 160 people, surely less than 170 people, will have room in the emergency shelter program. That's out of 1,500 to 2,000 people out there. But don't think that bothers Mayor Matthews a whit, or anybody else on the council for that matter. They're not doing anything to change that, and they don't express any concerns whatsoever. You bring it up, and they'll say, hey, we've expanded the Armory program to June, which is true, The program will, instead of ending in April, will go through June. So instead of place for 40 people on the floors, for those who wish to line up at 2:33 or 3:30, you can go in at you can go in, stay there all night, and leave at 4:30 in the morning. Apparently, being left in the rain in some circumstances, I've heard a couple of accounts of that, which have chilled me. Although I'm dry, I'm warm, but it don't sound good. Anyway, facilities are as they were pretty much every winter, though they are expanded in the sense that they'll be going for a longer period of time for this, 5 to 10% of the homeless population. The rest, if they try to protect themselves with tents or even sleep together in groups for safety, face the sleeping ban. And they face the kind of know-nothing crap from courts that I saw yesterday when I went into court and saw, I think I have an interview with her, maybe on one of my tapes, and maybe playing that later. Pirate, that's her name. She and her son are on the streets a lot. You may see her about. She has a, what you call it, a pet parrot on a leash. It looks very much like a cat. In fact, I would call it a cat, but they call it a parrot. Anyway, Pirate was in court for a camping ticket, to wit, a sleeping ticket. Might have even been for camping, covering up with a tent, God help her. And, it was for covering up with bedding. That was for section 6.36010B. That's the city municipal code. It says if you cover up with bedding after 11 o'clock at night on any public property, you are subject to a, what now amounts to a $90 fine. Well, this referee in court, and this was in the basement where I always recommend people, which I recommend people avoid, and this is the reason I recommend they avoid it. It was a substitute judge. It wasn't Kim Baskett, who's the usual referee down there. It was some guy named, I think, Bissi, B-I-S-I, something like that. I may have his name wrong. He seemed like a nice enough guy in his way, you know. But I tried to point out to him that the camping, the maximum penalty for sleeping, he did give her, I think, 36 hours of community service or $325 fine, something like that. And, of course, which she couldn't pay. And the maximum amount of community service you get by law is 8 hours. That was put into the law as a sort of a bone to the homeless, saying if you want to sleep for 8 hours, you're going to have to do work for 8 hours. So for every 8 hours you sleep, you get 8 hours of community service. That's a fair trade, right? That's the Mayor Byers' fair trade, agreed to by then council member and now council member Tim Fitzmaurice, who is a member of the Green Party, which I remind you as a platform is planked, says no legislation against poor and homeless people criminalizing poor people. Fitzmaurice obviously doesn't quite agree with that, or like most politicians, he ignores it because he has better things to do, you know, like, I don't know, deal with housing permits or pass legislation that allows for the rental of grass mowers for the golf course. That came up at the city council meeting. Anyway, in court, she ended up getting this huge fine, Pirate did, and this huge, and or I guess he converted it to community service, and I pointed out that's not according to law. I said, oh, it is, because you see there's a failure to appear, which is also she pleaded guilty to. And the motto here, and I talked to a public defender afterward, just sort of finding him in the hallway during the Huff meeting and chatting with him about it, is failure to appear means you didn't make your court date. But I have never heard of the court prosecuting a failure to appear in this county. Because if they do, you have the right to a jury trial. And it's a huge pain in the ass, inconvenience and expense for them to summon a jury to try you for failing to appear. Particularly if you're homeless, and it's obvious one of the reasons you failed to appear could have been because you didn't get the notice or you had all kinds of other problems and so forth. So the idea that you should plead guilty to this misdemeanor, which is what Pirate did, not realizing what was going on, and I didn't realize it either because I got there just as this was happening, is outrageous. The judge should obviously advise her of her right to a jury trial. That he did not do. And I don't think the referee in the basement regularly does do that. At least I know Mulligan, who was the previous referee, didn't do it. I know Baskett didn't do it on one of the occasions I was there. I've heard that since she may have mended her act. But the general rule is use it or you lose it. If you don't use the justice system to try to assert your rights, you're not going to get them. The idea that some slick public defender and some kindly district attorney and some compassionate judge are all going to work together to help you is a real long shot. I mean, I suppose in any there are always particular cases where that's true. But I myself am planning to go to trial, not that I want to, mind you, in February on my criminal case, which is, of course, the crime of saying everybody is entitled to speak for 2 minutes on a consent agenda item on the city council. And I'm going to stand here until I'm given my 2 minutes. And I was, of course, brutalized and hauled away by Lieutenant Clark for doing that on citizen's arrest from Mayor Rutkin. I'm being charged with disrupting a public meeting. But going through the legal process and demanding your rights, I think, is one of the surer ways of making sure. Often it gets them to drop the case. Sometimes you may suffer penalties because they say, oh, you stood up, we're going to make you pay even more. They're not supposed to do that, but they do that occasionally. So it's always a judgment call. It's always a question what to do. I have tape here from City Council, but I think before I put it on, I'm going to give us a brief respite here. Down on the mall, you may have seen him, Clark Baldwin. I don't know if he actually goes by that name down on the mall, but here's a guy who plays sax in front of the Rosie McCann's, I think it is. And he sits or leans against the railing that was put in by at the Pacific Trading Company's behest, destroying all the public seating space there, so making it illegal and difficult to sit because they didn't like street performers outside. But he nonetheless is often there. And here's a little sax from him while I figure out what's coming up next. If you want to call in, the phone number is 427-3772. If you want to check in on the chat room, it's pagesincolor.com. And if you want to catch me off air, it's 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F. And that, again, was one of our own street performers, Clark Baldwin, whose CD you can catch on the street, Compositions and Improvisations, Improvisation, Santa Cruz Jazz for solo saxophone. I'm not the most knowledgeable or appreciative jazz listener, but every so often we have a little jazz here on my show. And there it is, very little, sometimes as little as possible. Okay, well, I was going to subject you to me and Cynthia Matthews, but that seems to be kind of torture at an early time in the evening. So before I do that, and I'll give some of you a chance to escape, I'm going to kind of jump back to 11 years, to 1994. And you may remember in a prior show, about a week ago, I think now, maybe it was even last Sunday, I did a show where I played the tape of the witnesses to how police provoked a riot on New Year's Eve by closing down the drum circle and the music early and then starting to physically assault people who wouldn't leave the town clock area. This is before there was any organized celebration on New Year's Eve. People just did their own thing, as they're now planning to do this year with the, what's it called, DIY, do-it-yourself, last night, the ceremonies that are coming up. Actually, not ceremonies, just different kinds of activities that people are scheming to do, but not to kind of sell tickets for or hire police for or set up cages in the middle of Pacific Avenue for and all that stuff, but just, you know, to try to make merry and make as much joy as possible on New Year's Eve. Anyway, on this last New Year's Eve 11 years ago, the police, as you're going to hear from more testimony, prompted a riot. They assaulted citizens, they tried to impose their own agenda, and they forced people into the downtown area in a stupid move by Lieutenant Cipone, who has got an award at the Tuesday City Council meeting. I really wanted to go up to the microphone and ask to comment on the award, and I should have been allowed to do so, but I probably would have been shut off by Matthews and Rotkin. And in fact, I would say, because of the prior assault on me at City Council in June, I've gotten warier of going to that microphone. I mean, I do get up there, you know, on different occasions, but I don't do it as much as I should. I don't do it as much as I think would be appropriate. I think as much as I need to. On every item that they engage in, there should be the right of public comment. Maybe brief, but it should be available. And if they want to cut you off, then let them cut you off and say, thank you very much, I'll leave. That establishes a record that you are not allowed to speak on an issue, and that may come back to haunt them. And there is a February trial. I go to trial in February in the Santa Cruz courts for this bogus disrupting a meeting charge, but the Santa Cruz City Council also goes to trial, this time in federal court in February, for a pattern of repression against activists like myself, particularly against me, and false arrest in that case of the Heil Krohn salute. For those of you who don't know what that is, where I raised my arm in a quick, brief, fleeting gesture that indicated, you know, you're acting like a bunch of Nazis. It was silent, it was brief, but it was enough for them to say, okay, you have to leave. And I said, no, I'm going to sit down and stay. This is a city council meeting. I didn't say it, I just did it. Anyway, they had me arrested, and it was a false arrest. And the next 2 weeks later, other people came and gave the Heil City Council salute, and they weren't touched, of course, because the city council had learned that's kind of a stupid thing to do if people resisted. It's okay if people slink away quietly and in their fear, but when they stand up and say no, then the city council begins to look either very repressive or very stupid. I think that's what they learned from that. But, of course, they continued using other tactics, and that's what they've been doing. Anyway, here is the more from 1994, people talking about what the police did that night. And this is about 1:30 at night downtown on Pacific Avenue. And the conversation is happening near a thing called the Sleep Crime Vigil in Progress. And it was sort of a little cardboard structure that a number of homeless activists had set up, Dave Jacobs, Robert Flory, and others, who you probably don't know, those of you who weren't around 11 years ago. But they were active in asserting the rights of homeless people to basic survival sleeping right, as today some of us still talk about, as I do on the air. And the city council 4 months later, or 5 months later, actually it was 2 or 3 months later, proposed the downtown ordinances, which essentially did a lot of things like eliminated seating, the right to sit downtown except in very limited places, and restricted peaceful panhandling, and very severely also restricted political tabling and street performing, all again as part of the merchant giveaway. But they also restricted street demonstrations. This is a little known part of the downtown ordinances. And that was because they didn't want to have another little cardboard deal at night where there were two or three people sleeping in a little cardboard shack as part of a protest, or not even sleeping because it's illegal to sleep. They stayed awake and they were in these cardboard shacks. It was one cardboard structure, very small, didn't block the sidewalk, less than 6 by 6 feet. So they made it illegal to have anything on the sidewalk at night that obstructs movement. And when this was tried again in the summer of that year, they arrested the participants and destroyed the structure. It was some of the same participants, Robert Flory perhaps and Dave Jacobs. So a whole crackdown on free speech and political rights took place in 1994 under the guardianship of then-Mayor Scott Kennedy, and with Cynthia Matthews voting enthusiastically in favor. She's our current mayor. She certainly expressed no objections, and I think was quite supportive. Rotkin voting in favor. And, of course, Neil Coonerty, Ryan Coonerty's father, voting in favor, with Ryan coming out with no different position whatsoever that I've seen. I mean, he supports the current ordinances. They're still in place. In fact, they've gotten worse. He didn't vote for the latest upgrade or downgrade of them, which occurred in 2003 with the move every hour or go to jail or get a citation and then go to jail potentially. Ours is the only city I know that has such an ordinance. You can't have a political table in front of a place you're protesting for more than an hour. No, I don't think so. But they've still, that's Santa Cruz. That's what they're doing here in Santa Cruz. Kind of a local Patriot Act kind of stuff, in the sense that it's a repression of basic civil liberties and something that we ought to be concerned about, and some of us are concerned about. Anyway, here's 1994 and more from that night. That was the ogre of Pacific Avenue. Occasionally comes out for these events. Actually, I'm going to put it in a better machine. We'll actually hear this in just a moment, I promise you.
That bookstore. The former mayor, Neil Coonerty.
Well, he's still city councilman. He still talks a lot of shit.
That's correct.
Front page is
having a little problem with this tape. Give me a moment. I think we're actually, it is a working tape, although it is an ancient tape, so I've got to be careful. I don't want to push it too far, because it is a tape I want to have in one piece. Let's see here. I think this is the, here we go. I think we're ready to boogie.
Hear about this now.
So you were part of the drum circle at one point.
Yeah.
Were any bottles thrown before the police arrived?
Oh, no, not at all, man. We were just jamming. Everybody was having a good time, man. It was great, man. It was like best New Year's, man. I was pleasantly surprised.
That's what happened.
I could not believe it. Just moved right. Why call the cops, man? Why did the cops show up there? You know? Who called them? Was it like people in the tortilla flats, you know? I don't think so, man. It was the cops. I mean, it was the people in these stores here, man. People that own these stores, like that bookstore over there. You know?
That's the mayor. He owns that bookstore. The former mayor, Neil Coonerty.
Well, he's still city councilman. He talks a lot of shit.
That's correct.
Front page is what did he say? Did you read that?
The store next to him apparently said that the homeless vigil stunk or something.
Yeah, that toy store.
That's
what I heard. The quote of the day.
The quote of the day.
You can smell it a block away.
Right.
It was the quote of the day. I can smell it all black away.
I promise myself I'll
do it. Clock tower don't close till 1, you know that?
This is good.
That's correct. And when did they move in?
That is correct.
Before, I think it was a little bit before.
Yeah, like 55 minutes before. Or maybe even an hour before.
Yeah, no.
And what we're talking about here is the fact that the police moved on the crowd in 1994, January 1st, in the wee hours of the morning, 12:05, instead of letting, in theory, they should have let them do, you know, things mellow out. And, of course, there was any violent incident, dealt with it, and there was nothing that anybody saw that I ever heard any documentation about. But, of course, when the police began repressing, began demanding people leave, and then beating them about the knuckles when they didn't with billy clubs, then bottles started to get thrown. That was a testimony of the various people that I spoke with on that evening, and you can review that testimony by going to huffsantacruz.org, where the show is archived. Here's more of the testimony.
So it's nearing 2 o'clock. We're walking down the mall on the other side of the, next to the ID building, down toward the clock tower, across from the bookshop Santa Cruz. And the ID window has been hit. And what else has been hit? Evening again. That swing store got hit by somebody. And it looks like Toys and Games was not hit. Game a lot. People are still looking from the second story windows in the St. George. It's trash in the streets. Sort of the aftermath. Here's a window store. Echo is completely broken out. And we're approaching the Ben 10 restaurant, which hasn't suffered any damage. Evening! What's happening?
How are you?
Oh, not bad. You're still here. The same to you. It looks like a merry, eventful time, huh?
Yeah. So-so. Could be better, could be worse.
So who are the clowns who planned this mop-up operation that provoked the riot?
And I believe here I'm speaking to some police officers. 2 in the morning, encounter on Pacific Avenue.
Well, how did he... Okay, see you later.
So as we walk further down, actually closer to the center of things, it's interesting, no windows seem to have been broken, so perhaps the windows were broken when police began tear gassing, as I heard that they did. And it looks like there was a broken window at the Cafe Espresso Royale. Anyway, there is a broken out window at 1549. A storefront that's empty. And of course the bank. The bank on the corner at 1551 Pacific is taking a hit or two in the door. So the word from the man on the street is it's 5 to 2. You, on the other hand, should not be smoking. I've warned you about this before.
Thank you.
All right, then. Marijuana, yes. Tobacco, no.
Okay.
All right.
I won't smoke anymore.
All right. So a... the video camera is... youths are approaching the man with the camera and asking him to tell the story. What provoked it?
The police were the main reason why this happened.
They had waited like 20 minutes longer instead of like rushing people right when like at 5 minutes after 12.
This store right here, we were standing right there with poles in our hands, you know, keeping people away because they were trying to take stuff.
Now, can I get a statement from you on that?
No, I don't want
to. No, but an anonymous individual on the street suggested it seems strange that game a lot and... Don't cut yourself. It's broken glass.
More of it.
But Tom Scribner still saw us. Yes, it is.
Well, go ahead and get that on there. Not that
so then we have the... many windows are broken, but not game a lot in the bookshop Santa Cruz, which you were telling me earlier had a quote in the paper some kind. I didn't read that, but I heard there was a quote about homeless people.
They're the two biggest people against what's the homeless vigil. They're the ones that said that the smell is coming down the street, and that, you know, that's what they don't want in this community.
Right.
And it's right in front of their shop.
Well, it certainly looks like Kristallnacht here on the avenue. Flory, the blue-hatted peace vigiler and sleep crime in progress extraordinaire. That doesn't sound right. But in any case, what's been happening?
Not much. 5 minutes. Mike went to sleep. Meaning sleep crime. And announcing it to the light-deer clad officers on the corner. Even as he engaged in it. Hopefully things will slow down and I can go to sleep pretty soon.
Marcus, it's time for a game of magic. What do you think?
Perhaps.
You're not feeling like a magic game. So did Tim in the wheelchair got wheeled off to a place of rest?
I didn't even see what happened to Tim in the wheelchair.
Tim McGrath, one of the veterans of the 1991 homeless campground closure at the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Property, was here earlier at the peace vigil. Well, thank you, Evan. Some of the signs here at the peace vigil, and now that we're here, say the plundering of a planet and its people, land resources equals land, trees, people, oil, equals exploitation, production, marketing, consumption, and waste. A series of general signs about the exploitation of the environment, but I noticed nothing about automobiles. It used to be a prominent part of the Flory demonstration. Now seems to have taken a back seat, so to speak.
Abate our petroleum addiction.
And there you have it. Otherwise, we have a few odd signs. We are human, so are you. Think about it. Bad laws are made to be broken. You have no legitimate authority to write a law that makes it a crime for someone who is poor, has no house to sleep in the community they call home. If you were homeless, you'd be home now. Actually, the original phrase was, if you were homeless, you'd be home by now. It seemed to have more punch when I first said it many years ago. So, and you were claiming that the police ignored the peace vigil when they cleared it, Robert?
No, I was claiming no such thing.
What were you claiming?
I can't remember. It would be hard to repeat.
Are you disclaiming what you claimed?
Spontaneous humor. And now that it's being recorded, it
loses some of the original oof. So you were saying that the police, in clearing the peace vigil, came to the peace vigil, and I said to you that this must indicate the power of the peace vigil, and you indicated the absurdity of the situation.
That's true.
Because you said they came on the peace vigil, and they said, oh, whoops, this is a peace vigil. We don't have to clear this.
Well, they didn't actually say that. They did not clear the peace vigil. It seemed as if they were playing roles in a movie, and they were in a state of martial law, clearing the sidewalks. But the peace vigil was a dose of reality and a bit of comic relief. That was impossible, I guess. There was
continue with their role,
sweep it away. There was nothing. I was on it.
Don't worry about it. About 2:10, the police have passed us, heading toward the town clock. We're at the sleep peace vigil here. We have a group of about 10 people here, some of whom are still angry at what the police did earlier. Even Robert Flory claims they've been beating up citizens. Is this true, Robert?
That's what I heard. I heard that they were beating up people, hitting them with billy clubs, and I actually saw them push one guy who was refusing to leave the sidewalk here at the peace vigil. We got cameras. We got reports. Yeah, police hitting people with billy clubs.
I'm preparing to bed down here at Sleep Crime in Progress. I hope that I will be... you see, John Malkin has shown up. John is a college civilian police review man.
It's 2:47 a.m. With me is Jack Lai John. Now, you, John, claim you were near the band show or the
town clock. We were playing drums. That was right around 10 to 12.
Hey, John, here's your soup.
All right. And then all of a sudden, there was... cops coming in. That was at 10 after 12. And dispersing the crowd.
How do you know? You have a watch?
I saw the town clock. I was at the town clock. All right, I did is look at it. It was 10 after 12. Wait. After that happened...
Was there any provocation? I mean, did the police...
They just went between the band and the crowd.
Right.
And the band stopped. And then it was cool. Then when the cops went in the van, cops got in the van and went down Ocean Street. They were assaulted with
beer. Pacific or Ocean?
No, water. Yeah, that's water.
Is that water?
Yeah, it's Water Street. Yeah, that's by the town clock.
They were assaulted with
water. So the van was left there, it was there for what do you say, Matt? Niffa and Matt, yeah. It's Robert.
Amen.
Well, you saw it too, so you can verify what we saw. We were by World Savings Bank. We saw bottles being hurled that were missing a van. They were supposed to be hitting the van. They missed the van. They were landing in clouds. They weren't from Hollister, Campbell, Soundsay, Watsonville, gang members.
Right,
not San Cruz at all. Yeah, the crowd, I could tell.
Well, all the police told me they started beating up on people to keep the
Sergeant
from beating up on.
Yeah, it's not a good way to start off the new year, is it, Sergeant?
Do you really want to help your community, or do you just want to be an oppressor? Just a person of authority that can use violence at will.
And this is One Ton Dave, who is a vet. I call him a grizzled vet in a bathrobe who... kind of fought the city to a standstill. He would hold these peace vigils. They would come and ticket him multiply and arrest him, and he would fight them in court. And here he is talking about police harassment and police brutality.
I didn't see that.
Or do you want to help your community?
I did.
Love and peace.
So let me ask you.
If you desire a peaceful community,
I didn't see the cops.
Work for peace.
I might have missed
unlawful orders.
But only thing I saw was people throwing bottles against the van. Against the van. They were hitting the van, but some of them were missing.
And your own community.
If I would have got hit by one of them bottles, I would have been pissed off, brother man, And they were throwing 40-ounce bottles like this. This is a souvenir here,
Hey, Kim,
you're
okay. Where were you? I was wondering
where the hell you were. So Kim has just arrived, and I'm going to bed. We see a moon through the scrawny tree. Kim's going
to go home. Of course they're going to, react to it. You're taping me.
You were here at the last year's festivities, Kim? This is Kim Dwight.
Yeah, last year wasn't as bad, but what they did is the police are at all four corners trying to corral people into moving, but how can you move people when you're pushing them along four corners? And they were arresting people, grabbing people whose girlfriends were, being dragged along with them, and they sat on this black guy. Four cops sat on a black guy for 2 hours.
This was last year, right?
This was last year.
At New Year's.
At New Year's, yeah.
Well, I talked to a crowd of about...
Somebody got stabbed last year, too. Somebody got stabbed, but... Go ahead.
Hey, Bob.
God, they were breaking windows down here, Bob. They were breaking windows down here. People were breaking windows.
And Neil Kennedy just came by. I think he's on the other side of the street now, walking up and down.
Is that why he's got...
The cops started the riot by, trying to break up New Year's too early.
Yeah, they came in and tried to separate everybody.
No, people started throwing bottles. Got pretty white.
To come down here.
Okay, wait a minute. We have another report from the vicious Jack Light, John Hamilton. John, you say you were harassed last week by...
I was harassed last week by the owner, some thug the owner hired from the Georgian Cafe. And I told One Ton Dave about it 2 hours after it happened. And he said, I'm glad you didn't put your finger on him because it would have been all shit broke loose.
So what happened?
What happened was the motherfucker I got to my table, and then I went back to get the box. And I had to make two trips. Right. So I got mad with my box. This fool had his arm on my table, was it pushed all the way to the side with his feet on another chair. Yeah. And it wasn't in the place that I put it in.
Right.
I went, hold up. What are you doing on my table? Yeah. I got loud and wrong, man. I got loud and wrong. My mom used to say, y'all getting loud and wrong again, huh, Johnny? Getting loud and wrong. Yeah. I got loud and wrong. Hey, all the businesses fucking out there. I was young. Neil Cooney came out. Oh, can we take care of this real quiet like, you know, man? Oh, man, shit, everybody's looking and shit. And I was in the session, man. We're going to take 20 and get your fucking arm off my table. You know?
So what did this guy do?
I got really hostile, this motherfucker. You know, he was being a smart ass.
Yeah, that actually sounds like another story for another time. These are interviews from 1994. And I think that probably does it for 94, though there was more. And I don't have it edited as well as I might, as you can see. But it shows that there is general agreement by a variety of people, some of whom were percipient witnesses, that the police provoked a riot downtown. And, of course, it's nothing new that police don't mind provoking this kind of stuff. They feel they have the force, they feel they have the official backing, and they do. And ultimately, you know, it results in more repressive legislation because people are blamed for it, not police. It's kind of a catch-22 for the rest of us. So that's the grim scene in 1994, and of course it's considerably darker in 2005. But let's come back to 2005, and if you have any thoughts yourself, since that's where we are now, give a call. 427-3772 is the call-in number, and I will take your call on the air. And I'll even talk slow enough for you to hear if you'd like.
December 9th, and we're talking with a man who prefers to remain anonymous, but who has been jacked up for medical marijuana. Is that right?
Yes, sir. My marijuana was stolen from me, and I'll be without it for at least a month until I go to court on it. And I think it's really unfair because I had a card, and the labels were from the clinic, from the marijuana store, and
Lisa Milano's Greenway.
Yeah, Greenway.
Over in the Harvey West.
Yeah, I was told it's because they're federally funded or something is because the reason they did it. So.
Because the police are federally funded?
No, the campus police are federally funded. They're more
campus police up at UCSC?
They're state police.
Is it up on UCSC campus that you were arrested?
I was on Graham Hill Road.
You were in a vehicle where somebody else got pulled over and you were in the vehicle?
Yeah, they didn't have it registered properly and I had to go get my bicycle. Everything was returned, but they sold my charger to my phone, you know, the campus police, it disappeared. And so that's $50, you know. Plus they have my medical marijuana, which is my month's supply. And
how much was that and how much did it cost you?
It was about, I'd say, $600 worth of drugs altogether, of marijuana and hashish.
And you had
county card. I even heard that the Highway Patrol was doing this, but I didn't know I was going to be pulled over.
Is this the Highway Patrol or the campus police?
It was campus police, but they're state police, so.
Right. Now you also said there was a small quantity of hashish.
Yeah, a small quantity of hashish.
Was that also purchased at the?
Yes, it was. And she said it because it was a felony, she wondered if I could have it, and that I would get out the next day.
Like, being the police officer.
Yes.
Yeah. Can you won't recall her name?
Robinson, I believe.
Okay. So the UCSC officer Robinson arrested you, and he took you to jail.
Took me to jail, yeah.
Told you were going to just get out very quickly because you wanted to find out what you should have already known, that marijuana purchased legally at a city-authorized distributory was in fact rightfully your property.
Yes, yes.
But when she presumably found that out, you stayed in jail, right?
Yeah, I stayed in jail. Yeah.
How long were you in jail?
About 5 days.
When did this happen?
Last week.
And in jail, how did you get treated?
I was treated pretty well. I mean, I wasn't abused or anything.
No medical marijuana was provided.
No medical marijuana was provided, but I heard a rumor that they're going to grow it out at the farm, and what they don't sell the clinics, they're going to get the people in jail. But I was told when I was at the farm that they were going to grow medical marijuana out there, but it would never happen.
The point being that your medication was taken away from you by the authorities. You were denied medication during your time in jail.
It's not Santa Cruz police that did this. It was the state police.
UCSC police.
Yeah. Right. UCSC police.
But it was the county. What judge did you go before?
I can't remember.
Male or female?
I don't want to give his name because it might jeopardize mine.
Which department?
C.
Department C?
Yeah.
Is there a Department C of it?
Yeah.
I think there's numbers 1 through 11. So you also had a public defender.
Yeah, okay, Tom, just hang on a second.
Okay. You had a public defender.
Yeah.
Who, though she was able to get you OR,
yeah,
expressed no interest in getting your medication returned to you.
My marijuana card either, so. I just have, it just, I'm going to be hung up for a week with no medicine, and it's,
And you're also charged with what?
With possession for sale.
Now, you had a previous search clause because of previous marijuana arrests, and I think one involving psychedelics, and a probation because of that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so they were able to, would you have given your consent to search had you not had that clause?
No.
So what concerns me is that the public defender, do you mind if I say her name?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, I won't say her name. But this public defender apparently had no interest in getting your medication back. When you expressed your concern about that, she sort of ignored it and went on with what she was doing.
I haven't had a chance to talk to her. I'll talk to her next week, and I'm going to talk to them about that. You know.
Did you tell her that you had already, what do you require marijuana for?
For arthritis, for depression, and for hepatitis C, for appetite.
And so did you mention this to your public defender?
No, I haven't had a chance to.
And so, in essence, but she didn't make a motion at the, did she ask you what your condition was or talk to you about it at all?
No.
And how long did you get to talk to her in court?
Just a few minutes.
She made no motion to have the marijuana returned.
To talk with her next week.
Right.
So.
But at the actual arraignment, there was no motion made to return the marijuana to you.
No.
My suggestion to you is get from her a copy of the police report.
Uh-huh.
And she should be willing to do that. Call her before you come in and tell her you're going to want a copy of the police report.
I'm going to get one.
Possibly so, although I think they may charge you.
He didn't charge me last time.
Okay, well, that's great. Sometimes they'll give one to the attorney, but not to the defendant. So.
What do I do when I get the copy of the police report? What do I do?
Read it over carefully. Oh. Go down to the law library and get a copy of each law you're charged with violating, because that's what they're going to have to convict you of. In the past, they've talked you into plea bargains, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Think about. I mean, it's always, and of course you're on probation, so they'll have more pressure on you.
Yeah.
Have you had? Are they threatening to revoke your probation because of this?
Yes. I think I have a hearing too. Also. Yeah.
Have you gone to a hearing yet?
No.
And do you think you are? Have you been told by your probation officer, by the court, that you are, you know, up for a hearing on this stuff?
I'm confident my marijuana will be returned. It's just that the months between, you know, I should have been returned already. It's what my problem is.
Well, five on Saturday, December 11th. I'm here on
the 10th, actually.
10th? My goodness, I'm a day ahead of myself. We're talking with...
Getting into the future here.
Your name, sir?
Lex.
You know, every time I see you, you look different, Lex. Why is that?
The mutability of nature, I guess.
It's the glasses. I think you're hiding behind the rose-colored glasses.
Actually, if I take them off, I turn into Superman.
Ooh, mama. Take me home with you.
Right.
So we're here at the corner of Cooper and Pacific, where there's sort of a... It's not really a winding down. It's a breakdancing up. But there previously was a protest against torture, which apparently is supposed to be violating some obscure, arcane document, the UN something. I mean, you know, what are you doing? Trying to bring... Yeah, that ain't it. Universal Declaration of... Come on, victor's justice. Anyway, so what's this all about?
Victor's justice. The breakdancing or the demonstration?
The demonstration. Breakdancing speaks for itself. So.
Well, yeah, we're demonstrating against the use of torture by the U.S. government and its affiliates and subsidiaries.
How about the torture by the Santa Cruz County Jail? Any chance of any of these protesters mobilizing over there, or is that a little too close?
I haven't kept up to date on any instances of torture being used in Santa Cruz County.
The guy who died of tasering about 2 months ago.
In Santa Cruz?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
In the county jail. He was, the official cause of death was asphyxiation. All right. You're next. Breakdancing, that is. So,
Kathy's going to breakdance for us.
So, I understand Councilmember Tony Madrigal came and gave a fine speech.
I actually wasn't present for that speech.
Oh, dear. Well, yeah, right. I'm always
I'm
late.
Here.
But what you're carrying a flag of some kind, a banner.
A yellow and red peace flag, yeah. Indicates my support of peace.
I
which
see.
Is glittering generality, of course.
This means you don't support insurrection by the Iraqis against a brutal, oppressive occupation government?
Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Always trying to get you another one. Is that the sound of one hand clapping, or do you have another response?
It's the sound of a tree falling in the forest, so no one's around to hear it.
Yes. Very well. Well, we have been talking with the knowledgeable and prudently pacific.
Pacific?
Pacific, meaning?
Yeah, peaceful, of course. Flex proportion.
Thank you, Lex.
Thank you.
All right. So, Becky Johnson, the famed the advocate censored on numerous media, but not here on my show. What's the deal? How have you been? What's been happening? And how long have you been at the protest here?
Oh, I got here, before the main speakers got here, so I've been able to, talk to a number of people. Emily Maloney I talked to at length, and, of course, I saw Andrea Morgan, and Bob Patton's here, and John Thiel King is here, Louis LaFortune, Jane Weed was here earlier.
Former Mayor Jane. We also understand up-and-coming Politico Tony Madrigal, City Council member, was here as well.
Yeah, I didn't talk to Tony, but I did see his speech, which wasn't much of a speech, frankly. He just read some sections from the Universal Declaration on Human Rights.
Did he read the torture section, since that's what this is all about?
He read Section 1, which is kind of like the right to life and to be free of to be free people, I guess. And a couple of things relating to labor, in which it said that the people have the right to rest. I kind of picked up on that one. He, of course, was saying it in the context of a work setting that employees get a chance to rest when they're tired. Does he mean that people who are not employed don't get a chance, don't have a right to rest?
Have a chance to get rested, I would say.
Yeah.
Santa Cruz under the sleeping bag.
Well, I also talked to Paul Ortiz at some length, who was the other invited speaker. And
Paul will be a guest on Free Radio on December 18th, I believe, Sunday the 18th in the morning.
That's wonderful. I had a very productive conversation with him where he agreed that the sleeping ban, the blanket ban, are human rights violations and that activists who are concerned about human rights violations far afield from Santa Cruz ought to likewise be concerned about those issues at home.
Yeah, he's written a book on the smashing of the Black Civil Rights Movement in Florida in 1920 and how it also related to earlier times, and he's going to be talking about that on Free Radio. Perhaps, who knows, the sleeping band too may enter in. Anything else you wish to comment on about this particular event?
I thought that Paul Ortiz's speech, in which he linked how torture is used to prevent or suppress political dissent and to penalize activists and to make communities frightened to speak out against injustices, was particularly telling and true, even locally here in Santa Cruz.
I don't see any other Free Radio media. Did Vinny or Skidmark or any of the other old crowd from Free Radio show up?
The only person from Free Radio that I visibly saw and still hear is Louis LaFortune, and I wouldn't say he's a before member of Free Radio, but he doesn't. So.
Hey, you. We're talking with
Ron Lappy.
And Ron, you're actually standing here, pen and notebook in hand, kind of prepping inside the vortex for one of your forthcoming poems.
Yes, I am. This is a piece titled "Inside the Vortex," and we call Pacific Avenue now these days the vortex. Oh, so, and she's taking my pen, and I'll reach in my pocket and get another one.
You're ready for any occasion.
And so here I am. I have a draft of the poem I'm writing, and I'm walking along Pacific Avenue and taking notes and making little additions to it. And
we're
taking
not
all
trying to sit down on any particular point. That might be criminal behavior without a tape measure.
Well, you know, I was a street performer here myself back in the year 2000. I was the multi guy.
Oh.
Yeah, the multi guy on Pacific Ave.
Who was the multi guy? Remind me.
The multi guy, a multi-dimensional kind of guy.
Okay.
I was doing a comedy routine then, and then you know, yeah, and then my poetry, my Santa Cruz poetry, and it was what an experience it was to me. There's such an intensity being here on Pacific Avenue as a street performer, when you have the whole river of humanity passing by, and you're right in the midst of the flow of it, like a reed in the stream. And to me, honestly, it was a religious experience to be here on Pacific Avenue.
Were you ever hassled by police when you were doing this?
No, I wasn't. They would walk by and kind of look at me, kind of check me out, but no, I wasn't hassled. I was fortunate.
But I'm afraid we're going to have to leave our poet friend, and I'll be back on Sunday.
Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM.
Target locked on.
Pirate radio at its finest.
There's an unlicensed broadcast station here, and we want to make sure that you stop operating.
There is?
Nothing you have heard before will prepare you for this. The sound of radio is being revolutionized by the masters.
Go!
Is anybody listening out there?
FCC, you know what that means?
Yeah, it means Federal Communications Commission. They can drive around and triangulate wherever the hell a radio signal is coming from.
Yeah, so fuck it, right? Good idea!
Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM, for freakradio.org.
Good idea!
And welcome to From the Creams to the Dregs. And this is Rick with my friend Coral here. Say hi, Coral. Say hello.
Hi, Coral.
And we're sitting in for Uncle Dennis tonight, and here we go. I think.